Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
positron electron tomography scans. This is going to be a podcast while I'm driving off to one, and hopefully I'll be able to summarize it afterwards. So it's called a PET scan. So what it is that they starve you for, dreadful starving you, from midnight to the time of the scan, so that when they feed you a little sweetie, I suppose it would be a sugary drink, I don't know what it gives them. It's a radioactive drink they give you, and the sugar goes to your brain. We'll find out how they actually activate your brain. I don't know how they do it. But I know that they've... what they do is they give you this sugary drink, and the sugar is radioactive, and it goes to the part of the brain that you're actually using. So they'll find out what sections of my brain are, how healthy they are by doing them. So it's called a positron electron tomography scan, a PET scan, and I'm driving off to one now, possibly a little bit late. I sort of lost the time. I was reading an article, but I don't think it's going to matter. I'll only be a few minutes, at least a couple of minutes late. It's just going to be a bit of a nightmare finding parks at this time. So this is a scan, and what it does is they have detectors around your head, and the radiation is given off in such a way that they can actually work out where the actual particle comes from. Now we're just waiting here. This is obviously a podcast while driving. I have to watch it here and not crash and all that type of stuff. I'm at my intersection coming out of Glenbrook, which is up in the Blue Mountains. So, a PET scan. And it's something that I've learnt about over the time. I suppose I've learnt about it from nuclear physics, what happens in an annihilation. So I think it's 1.43 MeV electron. Gamma ray basically comes off with an annihilation of electron and a positron. So we'll get into how they make a radioactive source. Well, it's basically a radioactive source, a chemical, nucleus, which they give you, which emits a positron. So when it emits a positron, it's an antimatter electron. Okay, come across here, an antimatter electron. So what that does is that you have a nucleus which has too many protons in it, and so it's energetically feasible. I'm just waiting for this card, which is coming up, to process. Energetically feasible for a proton in a nucleus to emit a positron, which is an antimatter electron. And there's a bit of a story about how that happens. So one would say, well, look, a neutron is, a proton is a neutron plus an electron, something like that, plus a positron, or it's a bit hard to get your head around, but a proton turns back into a neutron, and a proton has got plus a charge, so it emits an antiparticle, a positron. So this is antimatter. It's pretty amazing stuff that I'm going to be fed something, which is matter, but in order to settle down, it's got so much energy in it, it prefers to settle down and actually emit some antimatter, and then the antimatter does something, which is, the electron goes out, the positron goes out and annihilates, goes with the electron, and when it does so, you have annihilation. Now, annihilation is, you've got mass of the positron, mass of the electron, suddenly no mass, just energy, and no momentum. Well, yeah, no momentum. You've got the momentum of the positron just thermally moving about. Oh, the positron will move out. Possibly go through a few collisions first. And make a collide with it. You can't have a violation of all the quantum mechanics and stuff. So it's energy, it just can't slow down. So an electron to change speed, it depends on what the potentials are and some of that. You can see here a Kármán path. But it will have to emit light. So it will form this curious form of atom, being a positron and an electron, and as it settles down, it will they'll completely overlap with each other. Now, this is one of the things is that they don't. Electrons haven't got surfaces, and positrons don't have surfaces. Their wave functions completely overlap, and when they overlap, they can undergo this system of annihilation, and in the annihilation, they produce two equal and opposite gamma rays. So when it goes off, you get a spurt of light, say at 0 degrees and 180 degrees, 90 degrees and 270 degrees, 30 degrees and 210 degrees. This is off, but that's where it goes. So the electrons will travel opposite each direction. So this is the gamma rays or the light waves. Now the light waves have to completely cancel out. When you go back, you have to go back, and they can't have any real net momentum, any net angular momentum. It sort of goes on. So you have no angular momentum to start off with. So they've got to have opposite spins, polarizations. So the polarization is to do with this angular momentum. So we've got several things. We've got a light particle has energy, momentum, and angular momentum. Angular momentum, a light particle's got no mass. Okay, no mass, however, it's got other things. It's got energy. Energy equals Planck's constant H times F. I've got to remember Avogadro's number and all these things like that. H times the frequency is the energy. The kickback momentum, the momentum you'd hear that if I punched you, give you a punch, that would be H on lambda, which is the wavelength in meters. So it's actually got a bit of momentum because this wavelength is really small, and H on a really small number is reasonable. It's got a reasonable kickback. But that is that wavelength is really interesting. It's actually a one on the wave number, which has got a direction. So H on lambda actually has got a direction. And it's like, oh god, it's really interesting to look at. And but H by itself, right? H on lambda, but H by itself, by number, has got angular momentum, and H has got the units of kilograms, meters per second, times meters. That is, it's actually got an angular momentum unit. So it's got three things. Light's got three things, and this is, and light can have three states of angular momentum, obviously. Well, if you think about it, it's a bit of a curious thing. You're going, oh, what's going on here? So you can have plus one. So angular momentum is like a tweak. Grab someone and tweak him, and the angular momentum could be plus H, plus 1H, 0, and minus 1H. So circularly right hand, circularly polarized. 0 is actually the light actually is trapped inside the atom, or inside the object, and minus 1, which is left hand polarized, how you do it. So it's your natural. Your way of polarization is the way you can actually flick your hand first, your back flick. So see, it's easy to understand the sense of the polarization. So you've got those three things, and they have to, each gamma ray has to take away an equal amount of energy, an equal amount of momentum goes down. This is inside of me, I'm taking a sugar cube, a sugary drink, and sticking my head in a gamma ray detector, which looks for pairs of coincident gamma rays. Well, I call them gamma rays. They call them X-rays. I call them ultra gamma rays. They're really powerful X-rays. Now, the great thing about powerful X-rays, friend, is that they're not as bad as soft X-rays. Soft X-rays are the real crapper. So soft X-rays don't leave your body. They deposit all that radiation energy in you. But the more powerful the X-ray, yeah, eventually it gets really bad. You know, you get hit by a cosmic ray, that would be bloody awful. But what happens is, because it's so powerful, it goes a huge distance, depositing only a small amount of its energy per meter. So it will say, well, these would travel easily 100 meters through air. So in your body, you're only getting less than 1% of the actual radiation. It just means, ideally, that if you have a gamma ray detector, so an X-ray detector, it detects all the stuff. Now, for instance, they really reduce the impact of X-rays by basically putting a piece of flesh in front of your X-ray machine. This absorbed all the low energy X-rays. So the CAT scan's causing effect is by removing these low energy electron X-rays. Now, these X-rays are low energy. They all got absorbed by your body anyway. So you actually get, they're pretty useless for, imaging, because they don't really penetrate your body with any differentiation. They all get absorbed by your body. So, like a low energy X-ray is pretty much like, you know, nothing much more than ordinary light. So, sort of like, you get a shadow of your body. So what they put is that low energy X-ray source in front of you. Now, I was really wondering whether you've got the problem of incidence, specular reflection of the X-rays coming off you. You do, when the proton converts to a neutron and positron inside you, and we'll get onto it later on, you do have to get a neutrino made, because proton has got three quarks, and it's got a hadron number of, which is its proton number, it's a quantum number. I don't know why. It's got a proton number of 1, so a hadron number of 1, so it's a neutron, so that's okay. But it's got lepton number. And leptons are electrons and neutrinos. That's two things to go together. And for each electron, you have a neutrino. They're all paired. So you get a family of three grades of electrons. Yep, that's right. You get your big, low energy natural electron. Then you have your the tau electron, which is, we call the meson, muon. Whether it's mu or tau. So there are different varieties of electrons and different varieties. For each one, you've got a different neutrino. And then you've got, for each one of these electrons, you've got the matter and antimatter version of it. So, which is really, it's fairly simple to understand. So when you put this in Feynman diagrams, this is just antimatter is nothing, no big deal, it's just travelling backwards in time. Yeah, well, this is another amazing thing, that antimatter, as its basics, is travelling backwards in microscopic time. So this is, how are we doing for time here? 46? Not a disaster, I'm here, okay. So there's a lot going on. So when the sugar I eat has an extra proton in it, and what's this, says, bloody hell, I'm going to turn you myself into back into something okay, neutron. It emits a an antimatter electron and a matter. Neutrino. We have actually found that neutrinos have a skeric of matter. Now, what? Matter. Yeah, matter, mass. That is matter, but it also has mass. Neutrino is one of these things which it had to be matter because there's a matter and antimatter neutrino. So neutrinos are matter, but we didn't know whether neutrinos have mass. Now, you wouldn't. No one cares about neutrinos. Like, neutrinos is sort of irrelevant to our society, basically. We have civilizations which neutrinos just pass. Sorry, mate. I forgot all about it. I was talking to you about neutrinos. Didn't look at it. Did you hear the person? The fact that they don't seem okay. Although they do seem okay. So this is just talking about the nuclear physics, which is going to go in me. And so I'm going to have a sugar cube, and I'm going to have matter, antimatter annihilation happening in me. So there'll be I'll emit a few neutrinos, matter neutrinos, as I make the antimatter. I don't make it, this should probably, I suppose I do. I suppose I'll take possession of it. So there'll be the neutrino coming out of it, which is different. So you can actually have neutrino detectors. Quite interesting to see how neutrino detects. I really wonder. As I talk about, I really wonder. Oh God, it's all happening around here. So the building, Australia is becoming overpopulated. They're just putting up skyscrapers everywhere. So, a lot of people saying that inner Sydney will become a bit like Hong Kong, so wall-to-wall skyscrapers and nowhere to live. So I reached the hospital car park, and so what's going to happen is I'm going to have this sugar cube. Inside the sugar cube, I'm going to have some antimatter happening. I had the really interesting story of technetium. Recently, I have this technetium cross. Just letting my pedestrian cross. No, he's crossing in front of me. Oops, he's crossing. I don't know what he's doing. A bit of a dance in front of me. What happens is that you have this. An antimatter radioactive source is just like the bee's knees. It's a little bit expensive. I think it'll cost a grand or so to find out. But I live in this country where they've decided that they're going to provide the best medical care for its citizens. Right, and so majority of, it's worthwhile. Guys, it's absolutely worthwhile having quality medical care, not just at the moment, it's a disaster, but having it background. So what's happened is that they've got this nuclear, we'll explain about how to make the radioactive sugar, but they feed this sugar to me. I haven't been on a sugar-free thing. I have to go for a full nearly 12 hours without sugar. So this sugar will go straight to my brain when I force me to think about certain things, and my brain will light up with this radioactive stuff, and so my body will start to ship sugar to my brain, and it will inadvertently ship some radioactive sugar to my brain, and this sugar will start to glow and emit gamma rays from my head. nothing showing up here. This is this nightmare of a hospital. Okay, and so every time the sugar emits an antiparticle, or a proton, it will unite with an electron, and it will produce two coincident X-rays, I suppose they call them. So I call them gamma rays. So I don't know whether I'll be right here. And they'll be from a part of my body, and it will be a line. So they'll have my head, and they'll be able to draw lines. So I don't know where the radiation comes from, but they'll know where on a line it's operated from. And so what will happen is, as the computer keeps on drawing lines across, it'll say, you know what, I think it's at coordinate 67, 87. That's where I think it is. And because I'm not getting anything, I'm not getting, this line's going, it's like an intersection of lines. So what happens is, where the lines intersect, they reinforce, and where they don't, they sort of polish them off a little bit. And before long, you've got actually a three-dimensional invasive picture of brain activity. It's going to be a real corker. That's hopefully I'll give you an image at the end, which I will image process. There is a spot. I think this goes right up onto, I'll get up here. So I'll have to leave you now, and I'll continue this stuff. I've just simplified the podcasting thing, so it can take, there's less, I've just done a little thing that it automatically detects whether the podcast is broken up. I don't have to tell it, oh look, I've broken up this podcast, synthesize it, so I can just stop it at this point in time. So wish me luck, and when I get back onto you, I'll tell you, hopefully, I want to tell you how the fluorine 19 is made, because that's really cute. It's got a bit of billiards in it. And I'll talk you through it. So I'll just quietly walk off and have some fun. I've got to really rush to get to the thing on time. Alright, bye for now. So, now continuing the recording after having, just coming out of the hospital car park, after having something like 3.5 hours to have a PET scan. Now, one of the things which I was confused about, some of my head, I thought it was a fluorine 19 scan. I couldn't work it out, but then it's actually fluorine 18. It all makes sense. So they convert the fluorine, the oxygen 18, which is reasonably common isotope, from, and I just wonder where the oxygen 18, I think the oxygen 18 comes from neutrogenesis in the upper atmosphere. I have to remember where oxygen 18 comes from. The oxygen 18 is converted by snookering out a proton with a, snookering out a neutron in it with a proton. So you just convert a neutron to a proton by impact. And then this converts, settles back down by producing the antiparticle. So let's go on. So there's actually a bit of a bit of curiosity. I didn't have any food. They put the cannula in me to inject the stuff. And then they check my blood sugar, because I have to absorb this sugary stuff into my brain for them to do the scan. So they, the way they do it is that they have this long tube which goes through the wall, the hole in the wall, and everything is shielded, all the rooms are shielded, because it's radioactive, and the doors open and close. So I've got the best suite, there are several suites you sit in, and what happens is they turn off the light and just say, sit back, relax. And what actually happened a few times, I just waited for. So say, put the candy in, go out, come back in into this place, sit down, put blankets on you, lie you down, and then this thin tube to deliver the sugary mix to you. So I'll just make sure I'm getting the right posies here. I'm just planning out what I'm doing. Oh yeah, so they go through, and what's happened is that bang, the door opens again, and the machine had a problem injecting. You know, was it me? Was I occluding the tube, or was it something else? Just paying attention here, guys. So eventually they got that going, then left me in the darkness, just relaxing to infuse, to let the sugar, radioactive sugar, go throughout my body for about half an hour. No exercise or anything like that. So I don't think they'd want. Wouldn't be too happy if I was using the sugar up. The sugar has to be used by my brain, only by my brain, and so therefore there's no exercise. This is one of the things I'm beginning to work out. So, and so left there, and then lie down on this. Lie down on this bed. So scissors you up. There's a head thing, and they strap your head in, put a little chin strap around, put you inside this PET scanner, which is a CT scanner. It's now PET scanners and CT scanners are pretty much the same thing, but this is just for your head. So it's much smaller, because all it's ever has to do is take people's heads. The other scanners are much bigger, because they take bits of your body and all that type of stuff. Because they want to get there. It makes you think that in terms of MRA scans, you could get a smaller, higher density, just head only MRA scanner. Because that would take, I think that's where you want the really high resolution stuff on your brain stuff. It's my own opinion. The higher magnetic field, if it goes from 2 up to 7 Tesla, you can really do some really interesting stuff with 7 Tesla fields. So, I would think that it would be worthwhile having, if you had to buy 3 MRI scanners, buy 4 MRI scanners, you'd be more clinically effective by siphoning off all the brains into a brain-specific MRI scanner. Yeah, and you could also do legs. I suppose it would be a bit uncomfortable just doing a leg. Or you could do baby. Well, there's heaps of things. Okay, so this scan went, and then they took a photograph. I don't know whether it's all that good, because I'll ask you more questions. We'll send the facts. So there's obviously something there. But they can see the amount of brain activity, the sugar uptake, in the grey matter scan. So the grey matter is the nerves. So I'm just going to have to do here. You'll hear as we talk about it. I'll just, really the only thing I have to talk to you about is, after this, is how they make the fluorine-19 is the interesting thing. So that's the overall scan. And I'll leave you now as I go off to this errand. Thanks a lot for listening. Okay, we've finished that little task. Just go around here, mate. Sorry. So let's break this up. There's podcast has happened in several portions. I've got to really zip around here. Several portions. One where I'm driving to hospital, telling you a bit about MRI scans, looking at the physics of it, telling you about leptons, neutrinos, and the fact that how it actually works. Then a little bit just about describing the procedure, And what they found, a photograph, so they'll look at them. So they're pretty cluey, these doctors, so they've seen heaps of these scans, so they'll see it and classify it. So, yeah, I suppose people ask you enough about your memory, you become really honed on it. And of course, obviously, I'm doing these podcasts and programming just for cognitive skills and all that type of palaver. Okay, come across here. Okay. I hope you can imagine it, just a cannula, some pretty freaky stuff where they're behind shielded things, and this machine, which is in a shielded container, goes out, and there's this little tube going out, and of course the people, when the radioactive stuff goes into it, they can only pick it up with tongs. So you've got a bit of an idea. It's not kindergarten stuff they're dealing with. Of course the toilet's a radiation toilet. So it's got shielding to go in and all that type of stuff. Because you have to, there's no point halfway through saying, oh, I'm busting, I've got to go there. And it's the same, similar type of thing. They cocoon you up with this Velcro cocoon, so keep your body perfectly still. I must admit, I did open my eyes halfway through it. And the scan, possibly 10 minutes, 15 minutes. It seemed to take a long time. Probably, I think my scan took 20 minutes. On a guesstimate, it took 20 minutes. To put through. And then you use scan. So the thing I want to talk about is the making of the radio isotope. Now, you don't need a big, like technetium, you need a big technetium, which you make molybdenum 99, and there's a big thing about making it. You don't need a big thing for making fluorine 19. You have to start off with oxygen 18, and that's not radioactive. And you just need a proton accelerator, which is like the very, very first sort of decent accelerator they built. It's a synchrotron. So Australia has a dual synchrotrons. In fact, we've also got synchrotrons underneath some hospitals, so the hospitals can actually make their own fluorine 18, but for some reason a central facility just pumps out buckets of the stuff, and we're a regional hospital, so we had to wait for a while for the stuff to come out. So a proton, which is just a hydrogen nucleus, a single H plus, impacts an oxygen 18 nucleus. So oxygen 16 is the normal isotope, and just to clear in, any even numbers are preferred in every single way. I know why this person has changed, because he hasn't got the patience to wait. I've got a right hand person, chappy, turning in front of me. Okay, and people, there's all this stuff here. So oxygen 18 has got, what is it? It's got 8 oxygen proteins, protons, what the heck am I saying, and 10 neutrons. And that's particularly stable, and there's a number of nuclear physics reasons why that's particularly stable. And so there's a fraction of oxygen in the atmosphere, which is oxygen 18. I'll just have to see if I can remember the origin of that oxygen 18. But like the argon is the radioactive decay of potassium. You know, a lot of the elements, a lot of the isotopes have a little bit of a funny story to them. Or carbon 14 is from cosmic rays, so it's life imbues a certain amount of carbon-14 in it, and then when it dies, it locks its way. It says, I'm no longer in the living system, so it no longer gets its source of carbon-14. So these all get interesting things. So oxygen-18 has a lot of neutrons in it. Now, you may sort of in your mind think, it's very tempting to think of them as tiny little balls stuck together, but in fact they actually, due to quantum mechanics, all float through each other. It's just like the same orbital distribution of electrons is again repeated for neutrons and protons. And the neutrons actually float through the protons because they've got a different quantum number, so there's nothing to stop a neutron actually going right through a proton. It's one of the bizarre things that people know about. So, you fire a proton, and how you do it is that a proton traveling in a magnetic field velocity will have the Lorentz force, which will push it off to the right, or push it in a direction, in a circle, and what you have is that you have it going in a circle, but the circle is broken at the 0 degrees thing with an acceleration plate. And you accelerate it a bit more. So you accelerate it a bit more, it's going fast, but over a greater track distance. And that means that it will arrive at the same time at the next acceleration plate. And so this is a cyclotron is something which can accelerate a proton up to enormous energies by injecting it into a vacuum system with this magnetic field on it, and at a certain point that fields no magnetic field but a linear acceleration. Now what happens is that those plates suddenly, as the proton passes the plate, the plate itself has its electron stripped out, and so it pushes the electron, and the electrons are pushed into the near the following plate. So the RF field is applied with a cyclotron frequency of the proton, and it just zips, 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 zips up until you get a reasonably high yield of proton power. Now, of course, there's not just turned up more energy, there's resonances, so there's these sweet energies which you can get up to, peachy energies, in which you can imagine the proton slamming into the oxygen. There's a particular frequency at which, rather than just fall apart, so sometimes when you put these in to atoms, this effect falls it apart, pushes it apart, it stays inside but ejects a neutron, fires a neutron off. Now, I suppose the interesting thing for me is whether you actually would create a neutron beam of neutron of the momentum and energy of the proton coming in. Obviously that can't, it's hard to imagine that happening because there's a momentum and energy change. I'd be really interested to know what is the neutron flux out of this little baby, and do you get a neutron beam? Obviously you've got to have conservation of momentum there, so, and this does happen. Do you actually produce a very weak neutron beam, and what are those neutrons like? That would be for me a very interesting thing, and it's also good to have a tabletop neutron source. I've got to remember how you get a tabletop neutron source, but you can actually get little devices that produce small quantities of neutrons. Neutrons are really easy to detect. So your oxygen 18 gets converted to fluorine. There's a chemical reaction where it's mixed with salt, it's like a chlorinated salt. So not a sugar, did I say? It should be a sugar. And that's packaged up, and I think it's a week maximum. Once it's made, I think it has to even be delivered daily to hospitals because it's got such a short half-life. And of course that's then put in this machine and injected into likely people like myself. So that's really all I have to say about PET scans. And of course, it's all part of the circle of improving your cognitive power. And one of the things I'll find out is whether I'm on the cusp of the falling down, the gradual fall, all cognitive power falls down. So that's okay, but is it accelerated? Is it abated? How much has happened so far? And you know, what's the story with it? So just putting a lot of effort into it. And I'll get off and do my next errand. Isn't it amazing? For all this, you've got to do some practical life errands at the end of it. It's beginning to rain out here in Australia. And of course, you know, there's all this, the royal families out here. And they're all been signed up for drought relief. The country's been gripped in drought. And of course now, you couldn't ask for a greener place. It'll never be as green as Ireland. Ireland's got a very heavy greenness about it. But it definitely is green. Everything's green, everything. People's crops are booming. People are giving everybody else's vegetables. I can't walk down the street without people giving me. I got a letter skipping to me yesterday. Just go across. Okay, well, I'll just say goodbye for now. And that's a PET scan.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.